down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all of my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty every time I say it. Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Lon Kiefer, known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, with his very unique message to caregivers to help them understand why they do what they do. I don't even know what I do, and of course, I'm a caregiver. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, and they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on. Learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember every time you board a plane, you kind of tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first. Sound familiar? Before you help your child with their mask? Now, the reason they tell you all that is because they know from experience that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then guess what? You won't be of any help to anybody with anything. Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It's called the grief process is what it throws us into. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. You can't go around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in to the show, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcasts and my books and my videos and my blog. I know it sounds like it's all about me, but it's not really. It's actually all about you. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or the shortcut, DaveNass.com. That's D like David, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. And that'll get you there too. Now, when you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, the story about my amazing wife and my amazing story, because I'm part of her. It's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is still selling it for, I don't know, almost 10 bucks. So it's a great value. Now, I want to take this moment to thank my guest last week, Debbie Cannon, who spoke about organizing the caregiver. To hear this very interesting and informative interview, just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com or DaveNass.com, that's N-A-S-S, and click the Inspiring Interviews tab, or you can go to iTunes by clicking the Radio Show tab. And I learned a lot. I'm a lot more organized this week than I was last week, and I'm going to be more organized next week. You got to listen to Debbie. She's amazing. Now, just a reminder, all these shows are recorded podcasts after they go live, so you will never miss any of them, including this one, if you happen to not catch them live. All right, enough of that. I'm going to go unmute my guest, Lon Kiefer. Lon, are you there? Welcome to the show.
I am here. I'm here. Great introduction. I'm a little upset I missed last week's program with Debbie. good luck keeping me on task for the next however long we have together. I I could have used some of Debbie's tutelage before I called on this. I'm going to be jumping all around unless you keep me under control. That's just a warning.
Well, Lon, you're talking like you missed the show. Didn't you hear what I just said? These are all recorded podcasts. You can go back to the website, and you can listen to her show from the beginning to the end. You didn't miss a thing. So just remember that. And thank you so much for patiently sitting through our introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. Sorry.
Oh, no, I'm glad to do it. And that's you're right in my wheelhouse there. Nothing is missed, you know. We don't have to think of something as a missed opportunity or a failure, because there's a chance to go back and do most of these things again. And thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate you coming at last minute. We had a cancellation, so Lon agreed to do this so fast, and I'm always amazed when that happens, how somebody can just drop what they're doing. Yeah, sure, I'm there. Boom. You know, and I'm kind of like that too. So thank you for allowing me to interview you, Lon. I really appreciate it. This is going to be a lot of fun, because I have actually never had anyone like you on the show before with such a profound message that's solely designed to get to the very heart of what makes a caregiver tick. I mean, that's the way I see it. So why don't you take a minute or two, tell our audience who you are and why you do, why what you do is so different from what others out there are doing, because a lot of people out there are doing a lot of stuff as far as caregiving.
Oh, yes.
And then we'll go over some questions.
Okay, fantastic. Well, you know, and it's really kind of funny, because, you know, you and I had a little bit of a wrangling initially to try and get to this point that I need to get to, what it is I do and why I'm different. Well, you know, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and I don't want to scare everybody, but Doc is really not me. It's really the thoughts that are in my head. It's the voice that I listen to. You know, we all have voices in our head, and it's our subconscious, it's our self-conscious talking to us, and the question is whether we're going to be positive or negative or what have you, and whether we're going to tune in and listen. And I've been a nurse for over 30 years, and I've been working with family caregivers and professional caregivers, and I started to identify a very consistent type of personality where they were focusing more on the things they did not do than on the things that they did do, and they tended to overcommit, and therefore they tended to always feel as though they were failing themselves and others. And I started literally to say to myself these "you might be a caregiver if" statements. And the first one was, "you might be a caregiver if you can make life and death decisions with a snap of the finger, but you need 15 minutes with a dinner menu." So, yeah, let that sit in for a second. So the point is, you're great in a crisis, and you're great for others, but you're not always great to yourself. And this is intrinsic to us. And I kept getting these thoughts, and I started calling them the word of Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, because I found that whether it was a family or a professional caregiver that I was working with, when I started to think that my role was also to care for their loved one or care for my residents or the people that lived in the communities that I took care of, I was really competing with people. And that when I started competing with the caregivers, when I started focusing on the caregivers and defending them, sometimes from themselves, my entire professional world and kind of spiritual world just changed dramatically.
Really? That's amazing. Well, let's go over some of these things that are just so interesting. Let's start with the concept all or nothing thinking. Explain that.
Yeah. So we've got, and I don't know if we'll get, it's up to you whether you keep me on task or not, if we're going to get through all 10 of these. But
I'll
there
try.
Are things, there, good luck, just warning. There are things, thought processes called cognitive distortions that are stinking processes that we all go through when we're under stress. And here's why I call them caregiver distortions. Because we're dedicating a portion of our lives to taking care and serving other people, and we take satisfaction. If it's not pleasure, it's the avoidance of guilt in doing it. So we are continually serving others, and therefore we live more stressed lives and are more prone to think in distorted manners. Do you follow? I mean, can you see that connection?
Yeah, guilt. Guilt is definitely part of the equation.
Yeah. You know what I refer to guilt as, and I will finish on all or nothing thinking, but all or nothing thinking is that you either, you know, if you fall short of perfect, everything's a failure, so why bother? You know, we say this story, why'd I even try? You know, why'd I even try? Well, what you're trying was pretty impossible to begin with. I mean, you know, Jesus walked on water, and, you know, thousands of years ago, and people are still talking about him, and Jesus is like, what? I'm just doing what I do. Doesn't think of anything, you know? Caregivers do amazing things and think nothing of it. And then when they fail because they're doing these impossible things, they're like, how did I fail? Well, how did you ever expect to succeed is my question. But here's what I do with guilt. You know what guilt stands for? Speakers love acronyms. And I, you know, I've been doing a lot of speaking all my life. And guilt is a process of gathering unrealistic, illogical, loathing thoughts. And then when you apply them to yourself, you're guilty. You get the whole kibosh there.
Wow, I'm going to steal that. That's gathering unrealistic, what?
Gathering unrealistic, illogical, loathing thoughts. And there's no theft in this world if you give credit or do it or put it into, you know, for good purposes. So feel free.
Yeah, I just wrote that down. I love to steal stuff, especially if it's good. That's good. And I've been talking about guilt in my book. I talk about the guilt analogy. I compare it to a disposable diaper, how, you know, the guilt is the poop that drops, and the diaper is like our conscience. And there's deserved guilt and undeserved guilt. And we can either, you know, guilt is a good thing because it makes us stop and say, wait a minute, I'm feeling guilty. Is there a good reason, a valid reason I'm feeling guilty? And if the answer is yes, then fix it. You know, apologize, turn yourself into the police, you know, whatever it takes to make it right. And then take that guilt, that disposable diaper, and throw it away, you know, because if you leave a diaper on a baby, it's just going to cook their little bottom. And then the other thing is, if it's undeserved guilt, you do the same process. If you say, you know what, I don't deserve this guilt. My mother is making me feel guilty for no reason at all. I didn't do anything to deserve this. You just ignore it, you know, like water on a duck's back, and that's the hard part. And then you take the guilt and you get rid of it. Either case, you're getting rid of the guilt. So that's my thing. But I love this acronym. Thank you. All right, let's go over overgeneralization.
Overgeneralization is where you see a single negative event as a never-ending pattern of defeat. It's something that just happened, which is isolated, is going to continue. It's like flipping a coin and getting heads and thinking you're going to get heads forever and ever and ever. But think of heads as a bad outcome. It's not rational. It's a distorted thought. And to go back with your diaper analogy, the beautiful thing about that, whether you follow the whole thing or not, is that you're making a conscious decision to look at and analyze, for lack of a better word, what's going on and decide if what's in that diaper, you know, if there's merit to it, and you're making a decision to move forward from the moment rather than just being stuck in it, and that is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
The whole concept behind some of the things that I try and share with my awareness, acceptance, allowance phase, and we'll get into that later or next, is that what you did with that diaper analogy is you took an automatic thought that we all have, which in this case, when we're stressed, might be negative, and you turned it into a rational response or a rational reaction. You took a minute, whether it's meditational or analytical, to look at what's going on and shift from automatic thoughts, which are frequently negative, to a rational reaction or response, and you moved away from where you were.
Wow, that's a really analytical approach as to what goes on in their minds. Are you a psychologist?
No, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, but I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV. And you know, one of the other things I don't do is I don't give advice, or at least I try not to. I hear myself stepping into it every now and then. What I try and do is give people a moment to take a step back and to look at the scenario that they're in, and even play it out in their mind in the direction they're going. And that's one of the ways you find out if you're having a distorted thought. You take the negative thought in your head, you play it all the way out to the end. You play it out to the end. You're bankrupt. You've lost your job. Mm-hmm. You've lost all the people you love. You know, whatever negative scenario you want to put on it. And then you look back at what just happened and you say, you know, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. And that's when you realize, I might be having a distorted thought.
We'll talk about mental filter now. That's kind of vague. What does that mean?
Yeah, mental filter. And by the way, if anybody wants these, they can go to my website and they can get these and download it in a PDF. My website is lonkiefer.com, and that's Kiefer, and it's for the FF in the middle. It's I eat French fries, to remember that. Lon, L-O-N, Kiefer, K-I-E-F-F-E-R. .com, and you can download these cognitive distortions so that you can look at them yourself and challenge yourself as to whether you're doing it or not. So mental filtering is when you pick a single negative detail and you dwell on it exclusively so that your vision of all reality can become, you know, darkened like a drop of water, that drop of ink that discolors the entire beaker of water. And some of us, that's kind of, you know, what do you call it, the caregiver's jail or the caregiver's
prison.
Yeah. I call it the caregiver's dilemma, you know, where you have this dilemma and you get stuck taking care of other people and not yourself. So somebody gives you a call and says, hey, Lon, we'd like you to go to this concert, or we'd like you to come over and play charades, or we'd just like you to take a 15-minute walk with us. And your immediate reaction is, no, I do that. I have all these responsibilities. So your mental filter is that you look at all the possibilities in your life through your current responsibilities and obligations, and you start to say, no, I can't do that. Well, the reality is you can. I mean, you could actually just walk away from your responsibilities and never go back. Let it be somebody else's problem. Now, would you ever do that? No. Would I ever condone you do that? No. But it is in the realm of possibilities. People do it. Mm-hmm. They go out for a pack of cigarettes and they never come back.
Some do, absolutely.
Yeah, so the point is that the answer can be yes, but there's a cost to saying yes. So can I go for this walk? Can I go do this thing? I don't know what the individual circumstances are, and it may be great organization that takes or a burden on someone else, so you choose no. But the point is because of this mental filter, our automatic reaction or automatic thought is no, when a rational response is, well, yes, but at what cost? And then if the cost is too great, you go back to no, but you don't do it reflexively. You do it as a rational response.
That makes sense. Let's talk about disqualifying the positive. That's kind of confusing, too. What does that mean?
Yep, disqualifying the positive. Again, and these are not mine. These have been there's a doctor with a book called Feeling Good, the Feeling Good Handbook, Dr. David Burns. It's been around a long time, but he's kind of the godfather of these distorted thoughts.
Really?
And again, everybody does this. This is not do this. You don't need to think badly of yourself because you do this. One of the things I've been accused of is thinking that caregivers are weak and they're flawed. And, I mean, that's the exact opposite of what I'm trying to imply.
Mm-hmm.
They're so strong and so confident in their ability to take care of other people that they tend to, you know, think they're bulletproof until all of a sudden they got a bunch of bullet holes in them. So disqualifying the positive is where they reject positive experiences by insisting they don't count. Or for some reason, they maintain a negative belief that's contradicted by our everyday experiences.
Give me a quick example.
Yeah. Okay. So I worked with this woman for years. She was an admissions director in the nursing home that I ran for a bunch of years, and she was phenomenal. She knew every in and out. She helped people in tremendous ways. And we're both single at the time, and I still am, not that that matters, but, you know, I'm single. She was single at the time. I'm not talking about a relationship that was buddy. I'm talking about that she was thinking about getting married, and she said, gosh, I'd be married for the third time now. What does that say about me? As if, like, three is thrice and you're out on marriage. I don't get the judgment, but the point is, and I said to her, I said, no, you won't have been. You can't look at it that way. Daniel didn't count. Now, Daniel was a husband that she was married to for many, many years. And Daniel died a difficult death, and she was at the bedside and all that. And she was so mad at me because what you don't know is that they weren't married those whole 20 years. They only got married because of HIPAA towards the end. And she thought I was saying Daniel didn't count because it wasn't marriage the whole time. I said, no, Daniel didn't count because when you're counting the number of marriages, you're counting failed. Loving someone and being at their bedside until they die is not a failed marriage. So it doesn't count as three, two of three, or whatever of whatever. You know.
So, she disqualified that.
Absolutely. Thank you for giving me closure on that because I would have kept going. But that's one great example. But
I got it.
You know, we'll do another of a close second to disqualifying the positive is when we get down to should statements later. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say this is a good time to take a break because we're right at the break hour. You got a couple more sentences you want to say before I do that?
No, you're doing a good job
all
keeping
right.
me on task. I could literally talk an hour on any one of these things.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, don't go away. Everybody will be back. It's amazing. I'm learning so much.
Thank you.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Lon Kiefer having an amazing discussion here. Well, Lon, before the break, we're getting ready to go to the next category, jumping to conclusions. Don't we all do that?
Yeah, and, you know, before I jump into what I to say about that, I do want to take a second here. You know, Dave, I have a couple of taglines that I'm kind of known for, and one of them is thank you for caring. I close almost all of my emails with that way. I close most of my conversations that way. I just say thank you for caring. And, Dave, your story is amazing. You know, I'm really glad that we met. And let's be candid when we're talking about these distorted thoughts. You and I met. It was urgent. It wasn't like life threatening, but it was time sensitive. We had a lot of ground to cover in a short amount of time, and I jumped to a conclusion initially, and backed away, and we worked through it, and it's wonderful that we did that. And, because, you know, I want everybody to know, no, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm just a guy that made a lot of observations, read a lot of books, had a lot of conversations, and I've learned these things, and taking a moment to get, you know, so I'm not smart. I just pay attention to what I go through. You know, these automatic thoughts and rational response transition is a big piece. That's what you and I went through earlier. And jumping to conclusions is where you make a negative interpretation, even though there's nothing definitive, no definitive facts to convincingly support your conclusion. You know, something will happen. You'll text somebody and they don't respond right away, and you think they're mad at you, or you leave them a voicemail and they, or an email, and they don't respond. I mean, my gosh, you know, their computer got stolen or their phone got dropped in a toilet. I mean, it has nothing to do with you. You know, but we jump to these conclusions a lot. I mean, have you seen yourself do that, Dave?
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, we all do it, and you know, with mind reading, which is a subset of jumping to conclusions, you know, you arbitrarily conclude that someone's reacting negatively to you, and you don't bother to check it out. You know, we'll text. Text is not a real conversation. This is not even a real conversation. Going down, I mean, you and I are 3,000 miles away, so we'll forget each other for that. But you, people work in cubicles. They're 8 feet apart from each other and communicate via text and email. Oh, they're mad at me. They didn't respond to me. Well, pick your head up and look over the wall. You know, hey, what's up? Why didn't you respond? You know, the fortune teller error, which is a subset of jumping to conclusions, is where you anticipate that things will turn out badly, and you feel convinced that your prediction is an already established fact. You know, we can bring things into our lives just by visualizing them and thinking about them. And, you know, it's just as easy to visualize a positive as it is a negative. It's a little less natural, but it's just as easy. And you can learn to visualize successes just as easily as you can unlearn visualizing failures.
Yeah. Interesting. So what's magnification?
Oh, magnification and minimization. I want to go back 1 second. You know, coaches, you know, you and I have both done some coaching with people. Mm-hmm. I work with people a lot on the issue of caregiver. I work with people on the professional side who are trying their best to work with family caregivers, and they repel them because they're too eager, and they kind of send the wrong message. And the message they send is, you got a problem, we can fix it. What the caregiver hears is, oh, my role is gone, my duties are gone, my responsibility, my relationship is gone, I'm no longer valuable. But coaches do a wonderful job for other people, and the reason we need coaches in our lives because they can see things about us we can't see about ourselves. With this fortune teller error issue, where you can anticipate things negatively, what have you, well, you can anticipate a positive as well as a negative. When it's a crucial time in a basketball game and a player is going out to shoot a foul shot, the coach will say, when you make this shot, this is what we're going to do. You know, that's what they'll do. They'll first say, if you miss it, blah, blah, blah. But then they'll say, when you make this shot, this is what we're going to do. And that does lead us kind of into magnification and minimization. Now, this one is a pretty tough one for caregivers. This is where you exaggerate the importance of things, particularly your mistakes. You exaggerate the importance of them, and you inappropriately shrink things until they appear to be tiny, like your own positive things. At the same time, what other people do, you say how wonderful it is because you're a caring person. So you really set a trap for yourself where nothing you do ever measures up, and what other people do, even though it's less, is greater.
And that's perfectionist thinking, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Perfection is perfection leads to defection is one of my sayings. It's like, you know, the only way you can be perfect is to do nothing. The only way you can succeed at perfection is to quit trying to do anything. You know, like, I love to sing, but I'm horrible. The only way that I can, you know, I can't sing if perfection is the goal. But what about joy? I mean, what about, you know, I'm trailing off here a little bit, but perfection is such a dangerous expectation.
Yes, if you are a perfectionist, and I know there's a lot of them out there, especially caregivers, you know, you are just setting yourself up for constant disappointment. You know, and that's the reason why caregivers don't ask for help. You know, I have actually spoken to caregivers, Lon, if you can believe this, I know you can, who relatives have come to them and offered to help. Now, this is the same person who complains that nobody ever offers the help. So finally, a relative comes and offers help. And you know what they tell this relative? Oh, thanks. It's okay. I mean, I can't believe the words coming out of their mouth. It's like they are so used to not having help that when finally help comes, they're just saying to themselves, oh, you know, they can't do it as good as I am. Oh, they wouldn't be able to do this catheter thing. Oh, you know, they're making a million excuses. But, you know, the problem is you take help any way you can. Nobody's going to do it as well as you. So just get rid of that right there. You are the master. You are the guru. And nobody can put that catheter in as good as you. Nobody can change that poop bag as good as you. But you know what? Nobody can cook eggs as good as you. But they don't have to be as good as you. They just have to do an adequate job. And trust me, when you get back from whatever it is you're having a break from, they are going to love you and appreciate you more. You know, they say familiarity breeds contempt. Well, they're going to be so grateful that you're back because, oh, the coffee sucked, you know, and, you know, they didn't do this right, they didn't do that right, you know, they wouldn't come when I rang the bell, you know. And absence makes the heart grow fonder. So just forget about perfectionist stuff, you know. Let me just throw in this too, I'm sorry. Yeah. Forget about being too sensitive. You know, get some thick skin on you. You can't always be having your feelings hurt, you know. You need to, other people shouldn't have to walk on eggshells around you saying, oh, I better not say that or I'll hurt their feelings. Oh, I better not say that because that kind of makes them crazy. You know, don't have that kind of reputation. Have thick skin. If somebody tells you something, just expect that they had the best intentions and the best motives in mind. Okay, so maybe it didn't come out right. Forgive them, right? The Bible tells us to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And that's why God gave us two ears and only one mouth, because he wants us to listen twice as much as we speak. Okay.
Yeah, that's really good stuff, and I'm sorry I keep stepping on you. It's one of the downsides of a phone call is that,
I know.
You know, but I'm going in about 20 different directions off of what you just said, and I know because you listened last week, I'm going to listen to the archive of it. You're organized, and you'll get me back on track. But I'm going to test that ability of yours for a minute and take a little sidebar. Here's one of the problems that goes on for a caregiver when they are looking at these scenarios. Now, someone that is raising a child thinks nothing or thinks far less of a babysitter, so to speak, because they think of a child as a growing, evolving, ever-changing relationship. But when we're in a caregiver relationship, we don't. We fool ourselves into thinking that this is some kind of a permanent purgatory or joy, because there's some people that are never more actualized than they're in the role of caregiver. We shouldn't always assume that it's negative. Sometimes it's the greatest thing, and there are serial caregivers that go from one relationship and they immediately seek another, and that's wonderful for them. But there's so many things that I could point out to you that why we can't allow others to help is because we don't view it as an evolving, improving, growing relationship. And that is a fallacy, because even if it is a declining physical or cognitive relationship, it is still evolving and changing. You know, when we grow up as kids, you know, I used to play cowboys and Indians in the same morning. You know, one minute I'm a cowboy, the next minute I'm an Indian. One day I want to be a fireman, the next day it's a policeman or a pro ball player.
Right.
I ended up being a nurse. I'm a guy. I was a nurse 30 years ago. Nobody was doing that. The point is, life evolves. It's not permanent. So you can't look at any decision as being projected indefinitely into the future. Now, here's why caregivers have such a hard time with this. They don't know they're caregivers. They use the term. They don't embrace it. Family Caregiver Alliance talks about this. There's 67.5 million people that fall into the category of caregiver. Now, caregivers will argue that their burden is greater than someone else's, so it's like they get a capital C and somebody else has to have a small C. But the thing of it is, I mean, come on, they do it. I've seen it. It happens. I've been accused of it myself. Oh, you're not a caregiver. Why do you? I've been a caregiver all my life. I may not be engaged in the type of way that you are right now, but they don't really embrace that what they're playing is a role, because in their mind they still think of themselves as a spouse or a parent or a sibling or a child of a parent. And you know what? You can't hire a spouse. You can't take spousal duties and give them to somebody else. You know, but you can take caregiver duties and temporarily give them to somebody else. So let's not just use the term. Let's wear the title, but the title is not you. It's the role you're playing.
That's right. And as you know, I'm a caregiver to my spouse, which has got to be the hardest thing to do because, you know, you wear two hats. Okay, now I'm a husband, but now I'm a caregiver. Okay, I'm a husband again. No, I'm a caregiver again. You know, it reminds me of the story where this kid worked for his dad, and his dad wasn't really happy with his performance. So he called him. Come here, son. I want to talk to you. He says, you know, I wear two hats. He says, my first hat is I'm your boss, and my second hat is I'm your father. So I want to put my boss hat on right now. So he reaches down, he puts the hat on, and he looks at his son. He says, you're fired. And then he says, now I want to put my dad hat on. So he takes his boss hat off. He puts his dad hat on. He says, son, I heard you just lost your job. Is there anything I could do to help? You know, and as funny as that story is, you know, it sheds light on it. You almost have to do the same thing when you're a spousal caregiver, because one minute, you know, you're doing wifely, husbandly things, you know, maybe you're kissing, maybe you're cooking dinner, and the next minute, you know, she's doing something that she knows she's not supposed to do because it's unsafe. You know, she shouldn't be standing without her walker or whatever, you know, and you chide her for, you know, in a caregiver tone for doing that. And immediately it affects your relationship as a spouse. Now she's mad at you as a wife because you called her on something as it's a tough job. It's a tough job.
Yeah. Well, let me jump in here for a second for a quick story about respite. I speak at a lot of respite care conferences and respite awareness conferences because it's very hard for caregivers to accept this role versus identity aspect of what they're going through. And there's a lot of statistics that you're going to suffer tremendously until you do. And again, I talk about, and if you go to my website and things like that, you'll learn about my awareness, acceptance, allowance phase that we go through in order to get to this point. You got to work on the inside and go out. But let's just take ourselves out of a caregiver, you know, role for a second and look at the spouse role for a second. Now, I have a good friend. As a matter of fact, he's one of my man crushes. I got my own issues. We all do growing up. And my dad, I didn't get enough of my dad that I wanted. So, you know, you don't even have to be older than me. But if you seem to be more sage and more experienced than me, I will have a man crush on you. And one of them's name is Scott. Well, Scott's married to a woman named Ruth, and he calls her Rufus and what have you. Well, when I first met Scott, Scott said, you know, I'll skip a lot of the lead up to this, that if I was on stage, but he liked to do things in the winter to keep active and split wood, for example. So he told me, Ruth is going camping with Mike this weekend. So while she's gone, we're going to split that wood. I'll be over at 7. So we came over, we split the wood. He worked me like a dog all day long. At the end of the evening, he said, all right, look, and we, you know, we lived a couple of houses away, and I drove him down to his house because we were exhausted. And he goes, wait a minute. He comes out, he hands me a thawed-out sirloin and some frozen asparagus. And he goes, you got any wine? I said, yeah. He goes, all right, I'm going to take a shower. I'll be up in a half an hour. So he wants me to make dinner, okay? So now I realize that Ruth is gone, and he can't stand her being gone. So now Scott and I are dating for the weekend. You know, I'm his surrogate wife for the weekend, right? So I make him dinner, and the next morning we're stacking the wood, and then we're working on this, blah, blah, blah. And I had these things I had to do, and I had to get away from him. And I made an excuse. I said, I got to run these errands, blah, blah, blah. He goes, all right. He goes, well, we're going to have some pork chops tonight. You come down to my house around 3 or 4. I said, all right, well, I'll try and get back. Well, I got way late and I couldn't get. I called Scott and he said, yeah, they had rain when they were camping. And first of all, Mike is not a guy. Mike is another woman. So I thought that was odd. Why is his wife camping with another man? But so when I called back, Ruth had come home early and he goes right in. He's shifted. Yeah, we're popping the tent, drying it out, getting it ready, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, after this whole weekend of trying to get away from Scott, because I needed respite from Scott,
I see.
You know, he blew me off because he moved on. And I'm like, what happened to my pork chop? You know, so it's not as funny quick, but here's the bottom line. I told Ruth this story later about how he drove me crazy all weekend while she was gone. And she goes, yeah, what do you think he does to me? Why do you think I go camping? So
and he, had, and he has no
problem.
And he has no problem her camping with another guy.
No, Mike is not a guy. Mike is a. There, it's actually a woman named. Her nickname is Rufus, and it's just. I didn't know that story. It wasn't a. You know, I didn't
you
tell the story well, but the point of it is. Yeah, I thought it was a guy, but the point of the story is that here's a vibrant, healthy, dynamic couple that need a respite from each other. And it's okay. Why, when we're in the caregiver role, isn't a respite something like that, a guy's weekend or a gal's weekend, isn't that like the epitome of health and normal and wellness?
Absolutely.
Why do we have to dismiss it?
And as you know, I told you, my wife is away for a week now. I took her to her mother's up in Visalia, which is about 2 hours away, and I just dropped her off because she likes going there a couple times a year with her aunt as well. And I come back here, and I'm a bachelor for a week, and I'm just having a great time. Of the first day, I went to two churches that I like at the same time, which I could never do while she's here. Then I drove down to Venice Beach, and I got my favorite restaurant, the Sidewalk Cafe, had my favorite meal. Then I went and had dessert, my favorite piece of pizza. Then I went got a peppermint mocha latte, all the stuff that I never do. Then I went over to my other favorite place for dinner, and it wasn't dinner time yet, so I had it to go. And then, yeah, I just did all these things. I stopped at the marina, watched the sailboats drift in, and I felt I was charging my batteries, man, and I was just doing stuff that I would dream about doing, hadn't done in years, and that's the way to go. And you know what? Absence makes the heart grow fonder, like I said before. She's having a good time, too. She needs to get away from me because I'm a pain in the butt, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They might need a respite from you more than you do from them. I mean, it's a very healthy thing. And you know, I understand that there's not always the options available. But, you know, caregivers tend to say, nobody will help me, nobody will help me. And I've looked many of them in the eye because I do not get confrontational or adversarial with anybody. But while I am also sharing that there is a positive way to look at something, I'm also holding them accountable for not just wallowing in automatic thoughts. I want to move them towards rational responses because there's nothing people love to do more than on Facebook or anywhere but to just continually complain about the situation they're in. And really, in some ways, they just want somebody to listen, and they're not moving forward. We need to try and help them move forward. There's nobody there to help me. You've heard the old joke about the rising tide, right?
No.
Okay, so there's a rising tide. The flood's coming. They send out the flyers and the bullhorns. You got to evacuate. The flood's coming. No, I'm going to stay. I got to stay and watch the house and take care of my responsibilities. You know, the water's rising. They knock on the door. You got to evacuate. No, I'm going to take care of my responsibilities. I'm going to stay. They come by in a little, you know, canoe. Get in the boat. We got to go. No, I'm going to stay. Then it's a motorboat. No, I'm going to stay. Then it's a helicopter. Come on. No. And then they're on the roof and they drown and they go to the pearly gates and they died and they drown and they say, I thought you'd save me. They say, are you kidding me? We sent you a memo, a bullhorn, a canoe, you get there little by little, and I don't know when it's going to come out. You and I are both, you know, we're authors, but we also have more books in us than we'll probably ever have time to get out. The next one that I'm trying to write is, you know, how to care for a caregiver as if you really care.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm writing it not for the caregivers because they won't read it. Trying to write it for the people that are going to try and help them. And there's some techniques in there that I think are very helpful that will help both sides, that if we can learn, we can get the caregivers to say yes, and they don't necessarily even know they're saying yes, and starting to allow people back into their life. Awareness,
awesome.
Acceptance, and allowance.
Awesome, awesome. Listen, we're late for a break, so we're going to take a quick break. We will be back. Don't go away.
All right, thank you.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years, after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back with Lon Kiefer. And Lon, we've got about 7 minutes to go, and we've still got to go over emotional reasoning, should statements, labeling and mislabeling, and personalization. So just take it. It's yours.
Okay. Yeah. Let's and man, I've enjoyed this. I'd love to do it again.
Yeah, me too.
Emotional reasoning is simply where you say, I feel it, therefore it must be true. And the more I feel it, the more true it is. And that is a huge, huge flaw in how we think. And we tend to be empathic people, and therefore we're also emotional people. And just because you feel it does not mean it's true. But I'm going to jump into should statements, because this one is one of my favorite ones. Should statements are like this. You go around and motivating yourself by saying, I should do this, I should do that, or I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that, but I should have seen that dad was failing sooner, or I should have anticipated that mom would fall, or I should do this, I should do that. Caregivers have shitty attitudes. You know, that's a play on words right there.
Yeah.
But the point is...
and I feel guilt coming right shortly after this, right?
without a doubt. If we do another show, I'll talk to you about my God complex, which is guilt, obligation, depression, and that sort of thing, and how they tie together. But the whole point behind should statements is that there's nothing you should do. You know, I should go for a jog. You need to argue against yourself. No, I shouldn't. Sassett put a shouldn't against a should statement, or a should against a shouldn't statement. I should go for a jog tonight. No, you shouldn't. Yes, I should. I'm heavy. I'm overweight. No, you shouldn't go jogging, because did you know 50,000 people a year die while jogging? Heart attack, get hit by a car, what have you. There's a reason not to jog. So now all of a sudden, jogging is not something you should do. It's also something you shouldn't do it. So doing it is a choice. It's not an obligation. If you do things you should do, you take no credit, because why? You should have done them. Here's a reverse. I shouldn't have eaten that ice cream last night. Yes, you should eat that ice cream. There's no guilt in eating that ice cream, because here's why you should eat that ice cream. We all know why you shouldn't eat ice cream before you go to bed. One reason why you should eat ice cream before you go to bed is that if you need ice cream before you go to bed, that's not a nutritional need. It's an emotional need. And if that ice cream allows you to relax and get a good night's sleep, you're far better off. Ice cream is health food, because stress is and no sleep is going to kill you a lot quicker than cholesterol.
I like the way you think.
Well, I love doing this, and I'm telling you, should statements are very, very dangerous, and we do them all the time. Caregivers are also liars. They're the biggest liars in the world. You ask the caregiver how they're doing, they go, "I'm fine." It's the biggest lie they could tell. You know, but I admire that, because nobody wants a chronic complainer either. We you know, so should statements are powerful, because we think that way. I'm a spouse, I'm a parent, I'm a loved one, I should do this. Well, there's others that don't. People have siblings that didn't. You know, I mean, I'm assuming your wife only had one husband, so your situation might be a little bit different, but there's siblings that end up taking care of their parents, and there's three or four kids. Well, why are you the one? Well, you're the one because you are either the most natural for it. You might even have fought for it, or it might have defaulted to you. But when you, it's not something you should do. It's something that you are doing. Labeling and mislabeling. This is where we use really dramatic language, and we consider ourselves a failure, or somebody else is a blankety blank because they did that. And when we put a label on people, it's easy to, you know, start to put negativity or positivity to it. Now, here's something that's very valuable that I want everybody to think about. Don't just throw caregiver around there like it's something you say. You know, it is a role. It is a label. It is not you. You are you, independent of, through, and beyond your role of being a caregiver. When I speak, it's a standard thing. I go out and I go, "My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver." And nobody does anything. No applause, no nothing. And then
they don't know what to do.
No, they don't. And then I say, so, you know, thank you very much. You know, sometimes that gets a round of applause. This is apparently not one of those times. And then they start to get it. They start to loosen up. And they start to appreciate my humor and their role and the value of them being caregivers. Personalization, because I'm going to leave us a minute to chat. Personalization, if you see yourself as the cause of some negative external event for which, in fact, you were not primarily responsible. Caregivers go around personalizing. One, a lot of the things like we talked about earlier, it has nothing to do with you. But two, they take responsibility for things that are not theirs. If you go on my website, lonkeefer.com, I want you to look at the video that talks about why saying "I'm sorry" are two of the worst words that caregivers can do, because it's a form of personalization. Saying "I'm sorry" over and over again is taking responsibility for things you had little or nothing to do with in so many ways. And it is a dangerous thing. While they're there, they can also search for on YouTube by my name, Lon Kiefer, or for Caregiver's Vow. There's a bunch of Caregiver's Vows out there that are two-minute videos that talk about awareness, acceptance, and allowance. And the whole point behind that is you need to be aware that the things you're going through are very natural. And you might be unique, but you are not alone. And accepting things as they are, not as you think they should be or that you want to make them be. And then allowance. If you do well with awareness and acceptance, you're a step closer to allowing other people to join you on your journey and saying yes. I said earlier about tips on how to help people. Don't help them be caregivers. Don't cut their grass. You know, don't ask. But if you do something like their dishes, load the dishwasher. We all have ways we do that. We might argue whether you're a big – I'm not a rinser. I've had these arguments about, you know, rinse. By the time they're rinsed, I think they should just put the dishes away and not put them in the dishwasher. But, you know, but load somebody's dishwasher, but don't put their dishes away. If you put their dishes away, you're competing with a caregiver now because they don't know where they are when they need them.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's things you can do, but certain boundaries you don't cross. And if you have me back, we'll talk.
Absolutely. You know, how can people get a hold of you? Because I just believe you've got a wealth of information that that people are just not used to hearing. You go really deeper than a lot of people do, because there's a lot of caregiver groups out there, and they're doing their thing, and God bless them. And but you're just a little, you're a, how do they say, a horse of a different color. So how can somebody get a hold of you? And give us some last comments or tips,
that our listeners
can immediately take with them, a takeaway, to start feeling less stressed and less guilty right now. Like when the show's over, they're going to feel much better.
Absolutely, absolutely. First of all, I get the horse of a different color, but I'm not a horse, I'm a bear. And if you go to my website, you'll see what I mean by a bear. Doc, my alter ego, is actually a bear, because if it was human, we'd be trying to take care of him. You'll listen to a bear, you won't listen to a human. So there's a point behind that. But the personality, the persona, Doc, is a bear. You can go to my website, linekeeper.com. You can go to YouTube and look up Caregiver's Vows. You can go to Facebook, Defender of Caregivers. I'm on there as a group and a fan page. I'd rather you go to the group, because I can see your dialogue better. On the fan page, it's kind of just me blurping things out. But on the group, it's us actually having a dialogue. So Linekeeper, K-I-E-F-F-E-R, that's I eat French fries, or on YouTube for Caregiver's Vow. Go to the website, sign up. I send out some emails with, you know, I do a lot of blogging and I tell stories. I think I am different than a lot of the other folks out there, because a lot of these people are saying you have to take care of yourself or you can take care of others. You know what that does? That becomes a thing you should do. And they argue against it. I think it's a wonderfully well-intended message, but it misses the mark frequently. What I'm trying to say is it's something you can do, something you should do. And you ask for the final thing that they can do. Well, go to the website, download these things, sign up. But I'm going to teach you the Caregiver's Vow, and it takes about 20 seconds. The Caregiver's Vow is as such: I am proud of who and what I am. I'm a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. That is so easy to memorize and repeat to yourself. It's a form of meditation, and it gets you a point to go from automatic thoughts to rational reactions.
Sure, that should be right over the fireplace where you can look at it constantly. Lon, thank you again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific time. Don't forget, all our shows are recorded podcasts, including this one, so you can listen on the same link any day of the night, 24/7. You can't sleep one night. Turn on an interview. Also on our website, DaveTheCaregiver.com, and the shortcut, DaveNass.com, as well as iTunes. Those links are all on our website under the radio show. By the way, when you are on my website, don't forget to take that quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? So you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, so you can understand just how amazing my wife is. She makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. God bless her. God bless her. You will be encouraged and uplifted by doing both. I'm getting a little tongue-tied here. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Goodbye, Lon. Thank you again for all that you've done and all you are doing.
Dave, thank you for caring.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.